Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpoga. This evening, we'll talk about presidential term limits in Africa. And tonight, we have Mr. David Himbara. David is a former top economic aide to President Paul Kagame. He's now a coordinator for the North American branch of Democracy in Rwanda. Now, he joins us by phone from Toronto in Canada. Good afternoon, Mr. Himbara.
Good afternoon.
How are you today?
I'm great, thank you. Thanks for your invitation.
You're welcome. We're also joined by regular panelist Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst, and he joins us by phone from Durban in South Africa. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas and the listeners.
Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. As I said, gentlemen, our topic tonight is going to be the presidential term limits in Africa. Last week, a plan to restrict West African presidents to two terms in office was dropped for the time being by heads of state. They discussed the proposal to impose limits at a regional summit of ECOWAS. Togo and the Gambia, both with the presidents who have been in power for more than two terms, opposed the idea. Across the continent in Rwanda, the parliament there is about to begin debating changing the country's constitution in order to allow its President Paul Kagame to stand for a third consecutive term in elections due in 2017. So, gentlemen, let's start from there. Let me start with David in Toronto. First of all, your reaction to this development, where they say they have received, according to one official there, roughly 17% of the population. That's about 2 million people have petitioned to have this change.
This is also what I read. But of course, I'm skeptical about, the petition or how they have acquired those petitions. In Rwanda, of course, you might know that the way the government operates, you have the smallest administrative unit in Rwanda. We have what you call umudugudu, sometimes known as nyumba kumi.
Mm-hmm.
So every 10 houses is observed. So if they are told to do A, B, C, D, they really have no choice but to abide by the authorities. So it's quite easy to just go have millions of people sign because they're ordered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what has happened.
I see. Suleiman, a quick reaction before we move on.
That is an old script, Douglas. What they are doing is an old script. All the dictators on the continent have used the same script. Actually, what he's doing is what was done by Mr. Museven just in the neighborhood in Uganda. Those are the public, those are PR exercises. Once the president is determined to change the constitution to suit his own whims, that is what they do. They have got all the power, they have got all the army, they have got the coercion machinery, they have got the financial machinery. All those are just PR exercises. If he's determined to go back, he'll go back at all costs. All the systems will operate according to the wishes of the president.
So in that case, then, what's the value of the constitution having put term limits? As you mentioned, in neighboring Uganda, the president bulldozed it through the parliament and the term limits were removed. Kabila was trying to do the same. Our neighboring Nkurunziza in Burundi, you see the chaos there as a result of trying to extend his stay. So then, why have a constitution at all? Let me begin with you, Suleiman, there.
The fact of the matter is that at the moment, the endemic element on the continent is the lack of constitutionalism. Is the facade of democracy, which is on the continent, most of African countries. What we are having at the moment in the continent, in the majority of the countries, is a culture of impunity, a culture of nepotism, a culture of corruption, a culture of unconstitutionalism. As a result, increasing poverty, and increasing unemployment, increasing immigration. So much they are taking it upon themselves to violate the Constitution. The Constitution is useless. At the moment, there is no need to have a constitution in many of these in these African countries.
David?
Yeah, actually, Suleiman and you mentioned the comparison with Uganda. I think this is even far more crude, even somewhat, even though it may appear sophisticated. This goes farther than even the Ugandan comparison, because the most surprising thing about Rwanda is that actually the people who are leading the constitutional change to allow President Kagame to stay in power are the opposition parties themselves. At least in Uganda, they were the parties were against. I mean, there were people fought hard. There was resistance. No, here, the political parties, some of the political parties began to campaign for Kagame as far back as like 2 years ago. So basically in Rwanda, you have a kind of totalitarian state that has overwhelmed the media, for example. Yeah, now in Uganda, of course, you have, you know, there is media. It may not be strong, but nonetheless, it's there. There's no media in Rwanda. There is zero opposition. All the opposition have been swallowed up. The real opposition in Rwanda, the opposition leaders are either in prison, or they've been killed, or they're in exile. So this extraordinary machinery that has, to use the word Suleiman used, bulldozed. But I think this one is in a category of its own. Even that sophistication of saying, wow, you know, look, by the way, Kagame himself is on the record to say he does not belong to the camp that is calling for constitutional change.
All of them say that? All of them say that. They say they don't want the people who want them to keep on.
but anyway, I don't know. Maybe you can educate me. I don't recall Ugandan opposition parties and the Ugandan media being on the forefront of allowing President Museveni to remain in power. No, I don't know. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yeah, they at least there was some opposition in Uganda, at least, like there was in other countries like Senegal and elsewhere.
Yes.
So this trend on the continent is spreading. According to this recent meeting I referred to of ECOWAS, the president of the Gambia, Yahya Jammeh. For him, he says he's now been he's reaching his fourth term in office. He came to power in 1994, and he says, "Well, there's no need to go anywhere. He will stay, even if it means staying ruling for 1 billion years." So, are countries in the continent? Some countries on the continent moving towards monarchism? What's going on here?
Douglas, actually, what we should ask ourselves is: those who have stayed in power for over 10 years, what has been the positive contribution to the country, the countries they are leading? Nkurunziza wants to go back to leadership, but his country is still the second poorest country in the world. The Yahya Jammeh, what contribution has he made? Cameroon, Chad, Uganda, DRC, the states are, they are still fragile. They still rely on foreign donors. They have outsourced the management of the country to NGOs, yet they are still perpetuating themselves in power. So much as whether they are monarchs or not monarchs, whether they are elected monarchs, the fact of the matter is that they are not adding value to the lives of the people they are leading.
Let me put something here.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I will not generalize and actually predict doom in terms of like the death of democratic struggles in Africa. No. Because as you saw,
Burkina Faso,
people rose and defeated a dictator. DRC, people resisted, and the project was kind of shelved.
Mm-hmm.
Burundi, again, there the people on the streets, they're not playing dead. Then I think the Nigeria, I mean, when you see a defeated head of state actually conceding in a very gentlemanly manner, and the incoming one graciously accepting the goodwill of the outgoing one. And of course, on top of all that, we have countries like Senegal, Ghana, where opposition parties now, have been able to come into power. And I believe that's also the first time in Nigeria that a opposition party has defeated the ruling party.
Mm-hmm.
So these are good signs. But the trouble is where indeed you have like the entrenched monarchies, the Equatorial Guinea, Cameroon, Angola, Uganda, Zimbabwe, Rwanda, and the like.
Mm-hmm.
So there is good, and the potential, and also there is the ugly. Ugly are those entrenched monarchies, as you call them.
Yes. Okay. In the second part of the program, we'll talk about that kind of group because it's almost half and half, or maybe if not more. But before we go for a break, David. Many people have whispered or analysts have mentioned that maybe for Rwanda, it was a foregone conclusion that the constitution would be changed and Mr. Kagame would have another term. So in other words, are you, like all those analysts, not surprised by this development?
No. I'm not surprised at all. First of all, I don't know if people have actually paid close attention to the Rwandan constitution, the one that is as it is now. That constitution itself, of course, written under supervision of Kagame and the ruling party in 2003, that constitution is extraordinary. You don't have a constitution like that in Africa or anywhere. Okay, first of all, it gave him 7 years times two.
Yes.
14 years. Yeah, usually it's about five as well. Okay, so that's one. Number two, of the three components of government, of the state, the legislature and the Senate, the judiciary and the executive, The Rwandan constitution allows only one term for chief justice and only one term for the president of the Senate. So the constitution only the president
can stay there forever.
Yeah. So already that constitution made him a king. So not only that, the constitution, the way it is framed. By the way, parliament, those members of parliament, don't assume. You know, people go and celebrate about the fact that 63% are women, and this is a great thing. That parliament, by the way, is not elected. Don't think that those parliamentarians have a constituency anywhere. No.
Hey, how do they get parliament?
Oh, no, it's the party's list.
Okay.
The party's list, and of course it's a ruling party, the list, basically appointed by Kagame, and then the parties that are, the junior parties that are affiliated to him. But and as I said, the genuine parties are not registered. The constitution also says that the agenda of any session of parliament or even its committee, president has to approve. So I argue, if you have time, please go and read the Ugandan constitution.
Yes.
So then the senators are appointed by the provinces and city executives, the executives of those.
Mm-hmm.
But guess who appoints the executives of the cities and provinces?
The president.
The president. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see.
So that is a king. So when he says, the constitution is going to change, and moreover, I'm not really interested. I have other things to do. But I'll listen to what Wanan say.
Mm.
Well, he's playing, I think Suleiman or yourself use the word script. It's already a done deal. Actually, already the constitution already Kagame has won 2017 elections because if they say 3 million voters have approved, that he should stay. So automatically that means that even if he runs against someone, the same 3 million will vote for him.
That's right.
So it's a game over.
I see. Well, gentlemen, hold your thoughts. Let's take a short break. We'll be back to continue our discussion of presidential term limits in Africa.
African Music Mix.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is presidential term limits in Africa. And our panelists are David Himbara, coordinator for the North American branch of Democracy in Rwanda Now, or DIRN, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. And I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here in Studio 9. Suleiman, David there mentioned a lot of things. And there is this pattern in those countries where democracy is, well, it's just there on paper, where you find a leader destroys all institutions and all power is invested in the president. This has happened in Ethiopia, in Uganda. You can see the president controls the central bank. He controls the security forces. He controls every small thing. He's the person to sign off. So in that situation, well, how do you stop him from removing term limits?
There is no way. There is no way. First of all, what we have to understand is that term limits were introduced into constitution because there was a necessity. There were conditions, both local, some of the conditions might have been local, others universal. That is why they were introduced. The first generation of post-independence leadership had tried the endless leadership. They realized in the end that after so many years, so many mistakes had been committed. Some of them, like Nyerere, even apologized. Others, like Kaunda, accepted to be defeated and give a chance to others. After that, there was a move to realize there was an appreciation that it would be better for leaders to hand over to other people after a time. Leadership is not completely in the building. Leadership is really you run your pace and then hand over the baton to others. So what we are saying is that the very conditions that precipitated the putting of the term limits into the constitution. institutions have not changed. Everything is still in place. They are still as needed as they were when they were first enacted into these constitutions. So there is nobody who can justify why a term limit should be removed. Because, first of all, the very fact that within those 10 years you have not achieved what you feel you should have achieved, you are already a failure. So to continue staying is recycling. So at the moment, the way my colleague has said, what we are relying on are the young people, because at the end of the day, these leaders have personalized every institution. If you look in countries like Uganda, countries like Ethiopia, like Gambia, the opposition has been totally wiped out. They are on the run every day. Even Rwanda, you are either killed or you are brutalized, because as we speak today, I think the leading opposition leader in Uganda, Dr. Besigye, should be in prison as we speak now for just walking around going for a rally.
Yes, so he was just arrested,
every day. They financially try to cripple you until when they have overrun every system and they become the only people in the country who determine everything that happens in that very country. So unless the youths of the African continent wake up the way they did in Burkina Faso, the way they are trying in Bujumbura, we aren't going to have success, because these people are so powerful. They have got the coercive machinery to overrun everybody.
Yes, they have power, and then there's this element of the international, so-called international community. You'll hear a lot of noise in some countries urging the president to abide by the constitution and not tamper with it to allow him to stay in power. In other cases, there will be silence, even at times, just support or approval. David, how do you reconcile that? Are there some countries equal than others?
Yes, the international. Sometimes, though, by the way, I also do feel sorry for international community. You know, because if I may speak about the case that I know best, Rwanda.
Mm.
So here is a case that indeed international community mismanaged in 1994. More or less abandoned, and then you have that genocide. And then, because of guilt, they overcompensate now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They give, they support. The U.S. is the biggest donor to Rwanda. Britain, I think, is the second biggest. They have supported the Rwandan military. Rwandan military now is the the fifth largest peacekeeping force globally. And then, of course, Kagame brands himself as a kind of Singapore Lee Kuan Yew, like a Singapore of Africa. And superficially, indeed, things seem to be working. Even people like me, we went there because we believed in this thing called Rwanda Vision 2020.
Mm-hmm.
There seemed to be a program. So we all jumped on the bandwagon. So not only international community, but people who were outside who had some kind of expertise to offer. So it looked like a good thing. But then, slowly, you realize that, oh, my God, what this man says he is not what he is. Then you begin, we will now begin to backtrack. So the international community now gets stuck. But, of course, when you quietly speak to international, these officials of these governments, like in the U.S. or Britain, because I have done, I do a lot of lobbying. I'm sure you realize that I was also appearing and gave testimony in the U.S. Congress last week.
Yes.
So, confidently, not even confidently, even in that hearing, you saw that the American government, the State Department officials, acknowledged that they're troubled by the killings and taken by the Rwanda regime in and inside the, and inside the country. By the way, that was the first time actually that I have seen anyway public acknowledgement of the repression. So anyway, the international community also gets kind of troubled and trapped.
Yes, but there are those. I've talked to many several opposition leaders from the continent. They come to these offices, State Department. They go where they are told. Well, now if this guy goes, he's the stability. What's the alternative? That kind of nonsense. Because why ask for alternative before even there is a chance to have one?
Huh? Yeah. Okay. Look, my own view is that in the final analysis, if change is going to change, it's going to come from within.
Mm-hmm.
The internationals and all the noise we make, the lobbying and so on, this can go on. They may or may not support a dictator here and there. But in the end, if it's not the Burkina Faso youth taking over the streets, if it's not the Congolese youth going to fight with the Senate to say, look, don't change a word on that, nothing will change. Will happen. It will remain the same.
Suleiman, the last 30 seconds, yes.
But we have also to put it in their face that they are delaying the transformation of the continent because all these dictators who are changing the constitutions are bankrolled by them. Museveni is bankrolled by the Americans. It doesn't matter whether his forces are in Somalia, but the fact of the matter is that they should not practice double standards. If Nkurunziza is wrong, Museveni is also wrong. The Museveni to stay in power for all those years, Yahya Jammeh to stay there in those years, Biya to stay there in all those years, he has stayed there because he's feeding on the blood of the people. The Ugandan leader, which way he has reached, he had to go through a civil war which took almost over a million people. What has started now in Burundi started so many years in all these countries like Uganda. Why do they continue financially bankrolling them? The people have done what they have done, but so long as there is tear gas, so long as the people are being shot, so long as the opposition leaders are being imprisoned and America speaks in tongues, and Britain speaks in tongues, and the EU speaks in tongues, the people won't be able to succeed. It's not easy to mobilize against bullets, live bullets, which are being shot by the Ugandan army or the Gambian army or the Cameroon army. So we need also, the people on the ground also need support from the international country to realize that we have to stop bankrolling these governments.
David, we have just 10 seconds. Can you utilize it? What do you see going forward?
Going forward is that we pray that the youth, the people, the opposition, we got the nerve and take it to the regimes, and we say hello, bravo to Burkina Faso, we say bravo to the Congolese, bravo to Burundi youth, and hope that other youth and other people stand up. That would be my wish.
Well, okay, we shall keep monitoring the situation as it goes on. That's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I would like to thank our panel, David Himbara, a former senior political official in Rwanda and now coordinator for the North American branch of Democracy in Rwanda Now, DIRN, Suleiman Mugula, South African-based independent political analyst. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Our producer tonight was Jackson Mufunganyi. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. In case you missed any part of this program, you can access it on our website. Just go there and click on Programs, scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.